It's not privately and stuff, but when we need to take bills to court or we need to take when Parliament is not acting on and what is things that we do, and it's extremely expensive to have to do that. And we're supposed to, and our jobs here in Parliament or as political parties is to hold the executive accountable, partly is to hold government accountable, and sometimes that means we have to go to court. And the public funding that we receive is extremely difficult to be able to use to that. So I think that fund, maybe a percentage of that fund must be allocated to be able to fulfill our constitutional duties as political parties in holding the executive accountable, and we should consider that.
But, Honourable Mantis, let me just understand it. What you are saying is that when the central fund gives money to Party A, Party A should not be prohibited from using portions of that money for its legal bills.
Mm-hmm.
Party A,
mm-hmm.
not the central fund. That's your suggestion.
Yeah, but the central fund won't necessarily be using it.
They're giving it to you, and you're saying when it comes to you, you want to do with it as you please. That's what you suggest. Not as you please, but for... Okay. Currently, are you saying currently it's prohibited to use those monies for legal purposes?
Yeah,
are you saying...
It's not encouraged.
Fine. No, I'm just asking so that...
It's not a line item.
No.
I'll come to you. I was asking that question so that when Kubisa answers, or Kubisa, you wanted to speak to it, but maybe you should just talk to this point in terms of, are there prohibitions, once I've given it to Party A, should we be saying to Party A, thou shalt never use this money for X, Y, and Z, otherwise you'll be disqualified? I think that's the question. And she's using a specific example of legal fees. But
and then this will follow.
No, Chairperson, I was thinking that the criteria must be the same. Because once you say, you Party A, you get this money, you may use it the way you like, that's going to be problematic. I don't think you must have a blank check like that. There must be some kind of uniformity. And we cannot be too general about it. At some point, we need to be very specific. You know, if you look at the legislation that's used in Parliament here for political party funding, it somehow tries to be very specific, and of course it does not include issues of legal matters, but unlike what is written here, that one is rather very specific, because once you buy t-shirts and all that, party t-shirts, they will tell you that, you know, you need to account for this money or you will not get your money or whatever. You know, I think we need to be rather very specific, detail it correctly, but saying to the party, we are giving you a blank check. Once the money comes to you, use it anyhow. That is going to be problematic in the long run.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would concur with Honourable Mulder that the Act as it's laid out is great because, you go to Section 10, then there's a section about regulations, and then you'll find that there are constraints on, more detailed constraints on what funds can be spent on, and legal expenses currently are not included. So Honourable Matthijs is quite right, but that comes through in a regulation. It's not part of the main act.
But if we're happy with that approach, then it's fine. When we get to regulations, we'll have that debate about whatever else. We were responding to you, sir. So in terms of the use of the money, we're saying mirror what you've got in Section 5 for the central fund. Do that in the document. As we go along, we'll want to improve it if you want to. But for now, mirror Section 5 for central fund. Anything else around central fund? Before we move on to this is private central, then we'll move on to private party. Anything around private central fund? Yes, sir. Anybody? We can always come back to you tomorrow. We'll have a document that we can think about.
Chairperson, I'm on part 3.8 of the what you call the preamble document.
Three?
Yes.
You're going back to three?
No. Number 8?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yes.
All I'm saying is there that it refers to independent candidates, and I think that should not be part of our mandate.
No, yeah, that will come out, exactly, yeah. Because we've taken a decision that we're not going to talk to local government, and currently we don't. All right. Just again, I'll be playing devil's advocate. We shoot it down if we need to. And I don't know where it comes in. The argument, well, there were two arguments that were raised by the submitters. The one was saying, but whatever you give to political parties, force them to become gender sensitive to a certain extent, I think. And then the second one was, should we give the go-ahead for the EFF, the ANC, the DA, to use some of that money to build its foundation that will be for policy development and so on. I'm just taking what has come from outside, so that nobody says we never took their consideration seriously. We'll discuss it, throw it out if we want to throw it out. So the two things that I can think about was to say, can't we be gouging parties to become more than just politics, gender and those type of things? The other one was, well, let's force parties to be able to have a foundation, but that foundation must be for policy development, leadership development, and so on and so forth. Should this fund be, should it not be used for that? Should we put it in, should we not put it in for that? That's the question that's being asked. Honorable Mulder.
Chairperson, yes, I understand the whole development with regard to foundations. It's an international practice, and you force parties to use that in an academic way, to develop policy, to train, give internships, etc. My concern is, if you give a party money, their first priority is election. And my feeling is they will use every cent for an election unless you change the formula and say 10% of the money you receive must be spent on creating such a foundation. If you don't do that, parties unlikely is going to create foundations. So the question would be, do we want to see foundations being created? And the only way I think you're going to get that is if you force it in terms of the formula, and if that's a good thing, I'm not sure. Because for most parties, the first priority would be elections and not necessarily foundations and policy creation in that sense.
All right.
We've considered it. We'll come back to it if we need to come back to it. Is there anything else around the public submissions that members can think about that dealt with central funding that we've not considered? We don't have to accept it. We can consider it, discuss it, debate it. Ultimately, it's our decision. I can't think of anything around the central funding. Of course, we'll come back to the tax incentives, as you said earlier on. Should we be giving them a carrot and a stick? That we'll come back to later on. And, of course, Treasury will give us that. Anything else around the central private funding?
Chairperson, if I may, it's a whole question of funding on local government level. But we said in principle it's not part of our mandate. So one may say in a report to the House that that was outside the mandate, because if at some stage it will be decided to fund local government as well, then the fund may come into play. But at this stage we don't have to say that.
Okay. We'll keep on looking at you guys so that at least you know how to populate this other report. Thank you. 11:30, we have until 1. I think we can move
to phase 3 if there's nothing else on phase 2. We can always come back if we remember later on. I don't know if you want to take a 5-minute break. Phase 3, remember, is funding to parties. That's what we're calling phase 3. You want to talk to phase 2? Yeah, direct funding. Phase 2, anybody? Stand there, speak. Speak if you want to say something so that we all hear it.
On phase
2.
Yes, that we maybe take the 5-minute break so that we can just get a ducks in a row in terms of process, how we're processing it, and whether this document that we're preparing now is going to be a set of instructions, or whether we're going to move into a what would presumably be an amendable format, which is going to be outside of this document that you're producing. So just to get our ducks in a row and see where we are with it, that we are on the same page as you guys. Just
so
5 minutes.
No, who to who?
No, you're supporting a break.
No, I agree with supporting a break, but I'm asking, are we all on the same page? Because I'm very confused with what you're saying. You know, my understanding was politicians are going to talk politics, what we want and what we don't want. And that's where our story ends. You guys come back with something that mirrors what we've been saying and for us to agree or disagree. So when you say, is it an instruction or is it a bill, that's where I'm confused. I don't know if other members understand what you're saying. My understanding, sir, is that's why I was saying, please develop this document. So that when you bring it to us tomorrow, or later this afternoon for tomorrow, it then caters for, we're happy with phase one, except for the one or two changes. We are happy with phase two, which is private central, according to this. Then we'll be happy with phase three if we've discussed phase three central with that. That will be the political product that we will then say to you, go and do the necessary. Now, whether in legal terms you call it an instruction or a whatever, I'm not sure, but my understanding, and members must help me, at the end of the day we're going to have a document and say, take this thing and put it into a format that you can, because remember the next step is to take it to the public afterwards. So I'm not sure if you can have a 5-minute break and maybe you can expand so that we can be on the same page, but my understanding is there's nothing else coming to you outside of what we've done now. But let's take a 5-minute break and we'll start with that. 5-minute break and then we'll start with exactly, then you can put the question and we'll have a debate about it.
Thank you.
Honourable members, there, but just listen, because so that we're all at the same page, it's fine. Mr. Prince, please put what you wanted to put on the table so that we are all on the same page with what it is that you are requiring from us.
No, see, the research team is now also on the same page. So what we will do...
Can we ask Bongo and your team?
What we will do is, and what we've done so far also, is that we will continue to listen to the political discussion, and where there are inputs that needs to be removed or inserted, we will populate this current document. And we will then adapt this document based on the discussion today and present an amended document here tomorrow. And that will be the basis from which we'll move forward on whether to introduce a bill or whatever the decision is after tomorrow. What we need to do with the amended document. Of course, as we go along, we would want to, if there's issues of clarity that we need to inquire, we would want to just flag that, either flag it in the document or raise it as we go along. Depends on you.
That's why we keep on looking at you to make sure that you are
following what we are saying. And again, I don't want to be tramping on your toes, Mr. Prince, or anybody else's toes, but basically what we want, and it might be putting the cart before the horse, but basically what we want is at the end of this thing, even if you've not put your legal tooth to it, it must look like a bill. Are you guys with us?
Yeah.
I'm looking at the legal team. Are you with us?
Yeah.
You must give us a document with a preamble, definitions, everything in it. You'll take it back and do whatever. So we're not taking over your job as legal, but we want to look at a document that will represent what you bring back to us, Mike. Are you guys together with us?
Yeah.
Just for clarity, it, the
what it looks like a bill would be in the same format that we have now, which is largely bullet points, so we don't have subsections, we don't have any of that, because quite frankly, to actually produce a draft by late afternoon so that you have something to read tomorrow, the idea is really here is to be a set of items like an agenda, so yes, we've agreed this. So for example, on preamble, the DA suggested to include the right to privacy. One puts there in red, right to privacy, and then it's there, and it's either then agreed or flagged or otherwise. But the outline that you have now is in fact an outline in a bill form. It includes repeal, transition provisions, management provisions, and the like. And that's what it would look like. And we can certainly produce that by the end of today. And then the actual crafting of the language, but the content would be captured in the document.
That's what we want. That's why I keep on saying, we will give you the politics, you will do the legalese. All right. We are now moving to private party. We're done with private central. We're done with public IEC. We are now dealing, Vincent wants to donate to a political party. We've dealt with Vincent donating to the central fund and so on. Are we all on the same page? All right. I'm looking to you to decide, how do we then proceed? Do we go back to this draft document and see if there's anything? Of course, there will be nothing on preamble, for instance. But I don't know. Or do we want to start on part three from eight and move from there? As long as we don't miss anything else on the top that might relate to party. I'm not sure. You tell us how we should start, because we're now really doing phase three, or part three, which is party to party. And just to remind members, I mean from the, and you'll pick it up from your thing, there was the issue of disclosure, there was the issue of misuse of state funds. We're talking now about party. There was disclosure, there was the misuse of state funds, there was the investment arm, whether it's advisable or not. It's about caps. Should there be caps on party funding? And should there be directives that say you can't use it for X, Y, and Z, and so on? Those were broadly the issues that came out of, and of course, I'm assuming, honorable members, the source of funding for the central fund. We never discussed that. I'm talking about the central, not the central private, because remember, can a foreign government put directly into the central, this fund that we've just finished? Or is it, we've never discussed that, the foreign funding part to the central funding. There was that whole argument of just ban foreign governments totally, whether it's to the central or to wherever. Is it what? It's
part 4, points 13 and 14.
Okay, can we just look at part 4 and see if it relates to the central fund before we move to the party funding? Part 4? Part 4, you say? Where's part 4? Okay. All right, on part 4, and we're limiting it to the central private funding, not party funding. Should foreign governments be allowed to donate directly to the central fund? Question number one. Honorable Lees. Government.
Mr. Chairman, here we're talking about a fund which is being administered in an impartial manner, and it's not a fund that is aimed at regime change, for want of another term. So I would think it would be somewhat silly to restrict funding from foreign sources, whether it's government or not, into there, provided that that is transparent and that's fully declared for everyone to see.
Other views. We're talking government. We'll come to other things. Should the U.S. government be funding the South African election?
I think in the for me, what I've got from the submissions during the public hearings, most of them, and I think in our summary we're also agreeing that foreign funding from foreign governments is a no-no, that we should not accept that. That was my and my proposal.
Other views? Government to central funding. In other words, a check from, I don't know, Namibian government or Zimbabwean government. Should we allow that to go to the central fund? Regardless how we use it in the central fund, should we allow it to go in there is the question.
May I ask the question? What are we dealing with? We are dealing with a fund which we call the Multi-Party Democracy Fund, for example. The question would be, if we are serious about multi-party democracy, which our constitution says we've got, should we have a question mark with regard to any legitimate funds being put into a fund to enhance multi-party democracy, yes or no? Legal funds, that would be the question. And one could argue, as Honorable Maseko is arguing, that foreign donations should not be allowed. I would understand foreign donations in that sense to a specific political party individually, with a specific agenda. But if we are serious and we say we all believe in multi-party democracy, we want to enhance and protect it, why do we want to exclude any legal funds? I'm not talking about organized crime, or we are talking about legal, declared open funds in terms of enhancing multi-party democracy. That's the question.
Any other views? We're limiting it to government to government. We're talking about money's going to this central fund. It seems to me, and look, we'll put it in, we can always say it as we go on. It seems to me that there must be a compelling reason why government can't use the central fund as it stands now. And people can come back and argue it if they want to. All right? Foreign individuals to the central fund. Look, I think what the
I think what the submissions were saying, foreign individuals, if they put into the central fund, they use your argument. The only question is, should there be a cap? I think that was the question around the submissions. Everybody was saying, put it into that central fund as long as you don't give it directly to Party A. The only question is, should there be a cap to that central, should there be a cap to that individual? Any comments on that one? No, a cap to the individual. You as an individual can't give more than 10 rand. Yeah. And we're talking to the central fund, not to the party at this point. Should there be a cap? No?
No. I don't think there should be a cap, because I think understanding this fund is for almost everyone. So everyone is going to benefit from it. So we can't put a cap. I think we may have to leave it at that. Thanks.
Okay.
Should state enterprises donate to the central fund, Mr. Mulder and Mr. Lees?
My view is no.
Mr. Lees?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman, absolutely not. And we're talking about another form of taking a tax and putting it in the fund. So if there's a need for more funds, let's do it through the normal
So that's not limited to state-owned enterprises. What we are saying, no taxpayers' money must go into this fund. No. Are you guys with us? No taxpayers' money in any form. Yeah, we are limiting it to SOEs, but they could be from all sorts of forms. No taxpayers' money must be accepted in this form. That will be the instruction to whoever's managing this form. This fund. Okay?
Chair,
yes, ma'am?
But we also would need to look at, for example,
public investment corporate, what is it, PEC? For example, Telkom, right? It's not a state entity, technically, but government has 40% shares in it. So how do we look at that? You know, so those companies, the government has a large stakeholder, but they might not they don't fall under state-owned enterprises. I think we need to, those companies that are on. Because a lot, and that's big.
So you're saying if Telkom wanted to come and give us something, will it be classified as state-owned or is it private-owned? You're right. All right, let's have that discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're going to find ourselves digging into a very, very quick quagmire here because if one looks at the PIC, it has investments throughout the stock market. And so it's going to be very difficult for anyone to be able to control that, given the confidentiality with which the PIC has traditionally treated its investments. I know that last year we managed to get a confidential list of investments out of them, but I don't know that it's possible and practical to do this. And if we were, we'd have to start determining what level of shareholding constitutes a level beyond which no donation should be accepted from that particular entity. And in my mind, I think we shouldn't enter into it. We look simply at the state-owned entities and as you put it, all taxpayer money. I think that's a very good way of looking at it.
All right. State-owned entities and government departments are a no-no. We're giving you the politics. You'll put it into the legalese. All right? Enterprises doing business with the state. Now, enterprises doing business with the state, into the central fund they can pay. Okay? Yes, Honorable Mulder?
The wording at the moment says doing business only. No, you're right.
Because when it comes, and this one I think is informed more when it comes to party. Because I do business only with the state, I take that money and I give it to the ANC. I become a conduit. But here we're talking about the central fund. Quite honestly, if somebody only does business with government, it's his property, he can distribute it however he wants to distribute it, he puts it into the central fund, I shouldn't see it as a problem, personally. All right? So that one doesn't even come into part of the prohibitions. Because we're not going to be saying you are allowed or allowed. We're just going to be putting those that we don't want. So in terms of the central fund, that line must not exist. All right.
Anything else?
In this document, because this document represents what people were saying for the past 2 days. Anything else here that you think we should consider for the central private fund? Anything else?
I think I just wanted to comment and welcome number 14.
We're talking about central fund now. We have your central fund. All right?
With others, you can always remind us as you come along. Okay, honorable members, let's move to... Oh, we were starting to identify the issues around direct funding that were highlighted in the public hearings. Remember, somebody must put aside outstanding is the whole 90-50. That whole distribute formula is something that we will have to discuss, but it doesn't fit into this category now. Where do we want to start around party funding? But let's take a topic, deal with the topic. They will then make it flow at some point. But let's just agree on what topic we're talking about. Disclosure, are we talking about investment wings, are we talking about whatever it is. I'm not fussy on which one we discuss, but let's at least agree on a topic so that we don't go all over the show. Let's talk about investment arms. It's fine. I mean, we'll always come back to it. In terms of investment arms, political parties, we can't hear it. Outlaw political parties from having investment arms. I'm saying from here, we can't outlaw it. What we would need to do is to say that investment arm, whoever investment arm is, how should that one relate to, I think the argument was an investment arm does business with government, gets paid, and then gives the money to the party. Or that investment arm, because it is connected, gets lots of business, in other words, tenders from the government. Those are the concerns that the public had around that. Sir?
Chairperson, you're correct. We cannot prevent political parties from doing business things in terms of investment arms. That's correct. If I understand correctly, no business arm of any party is ever going to receive any funds from the IEC fund. Funds go to political parties, not investment arms. No investment arm is ever going to receive funds from the central private fund. That goes to political parties. So that's not that's not where they come in. They come in terms of if they make donations to parties and where do they get the money from. And what do they need to disclose and what are they allowed to do and what are they not allowed to do. And that's what the discussion should be about.
Yeah. Kick start with anybody. Mr.
Chairman, but one can't differentiate between what we're referring to as an investment arm and any other donor to the party. The investment arm donations to the party would be controlled in the same way as any other donations. They're simply another donor. I think that the issue really is that accusations have been made about particular investment arms getting preferential treatment in tenders and so on. But we have a plethora of laws that control all that side of things, and I don't think that we can even scratch the surface here of trying to control how tenders are issued and awarded. So I would suggest that that's really not a topic for this Act at all. It is really more about how that investment arm interacts with the party as a donor to the party. Because if it is an investment arm, it is separate from the party. It's not the party. We don't have such an investment arm, but so may, due respect, just refer to Chancellor Haas. If I understood it correctly, it's a separate entity from the ANC. And so it would then invest funds perhaps for the ANC, but the profits would be channeled back to the ANC and would then form a donation to the ANC because it's a separate entity. And it must be as like any, if whatever we agree for other donors, it must be the same for the investment arm, is the way I would see it.
Okay. We did say there's no holy cows, honourable members, and really it's not about below the belt. We are talking about the future. But remember, there was this whole argument about Hitachi and all those type of things. We must just make sure that when we take it to the public, nobody says, but they deliberately left it out. I agree with your point that, you know, if Chancellor House did business with Eskom or anybody else, first of all, there's a tender process there. The question is, when Chancellor House brings that money to the ANC, if we are saying that the ANC must declare all its funds, then people can start asking questions, but this big money that is coming from Chancellor House, what does Chancellor House do? Because if Chancellor House's only business is to deal with government, then it's a problem. So I think I take your point that the catch would be the declaring of the political parties for whoever the donor might be. That's where I'm seeing it, but it's open. I mean, we're talking about all those type of things, which it was raised in the public debates. We must just make sure that we think about it carefully. It can be any political party. Bearing in mind that Mr. Singh also said, they have had investment wings forever. So I've got this building, we only use the first floor. Am I not allowed to rent the second and the third floor to somebody else as part of my So it's all those type of things. Is it, was it just a mountain out of a molehill, or is this declaring a way of catching it? That's what we must discuss. Matthijs and then Mulder.
Okay, Chair. Even if the investment arm, right, is, we hold it to the same level of that it becomes a private donation and accountability, they are still going to donate because they're free. There's no regulation that's saying that they can't donate. So, for example, Chancellor House is going to say, I want to give to the ANC, and they're going to give, and it's going to be declared, and then what? So we do need to deal with the point of them doing business with the state. And while we can't regulate to the extent of where they do their investments, etc., but in terms of them having deals or getting tenders directly from the state, we have to deal with that. Because whichever party is going to be in power, and it goes even all the way down to local government as well, because there are businesses, I mean, political parties are running local government as well, and they do tenders and stuff, so we do. We need to have a discussion on regulating. Do they do... Are they? Can they even apply for tenders with the state, and we must make that decision? I'm saying no. Just like we're saying we are not accepting public, we're not accepting donations from state entities and government departments, etc., into the fund, the same must apply. If a political party has an investment arm, no tenders at all with the state. They must go and generate their income and investments elsewhere outside.
That's political party.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come to you, Bongo. Mother?
I think Honourable Matthijs is right, Chairperson. What is the problem here? The problem is the following, and I'm using examples, and there are no holy cows, please. Is there any chance that Eskom, for example, would ever give the ANC or the DA a contract to build a power station? The answer is no. Why? Because a political party is a different animal. So it's not going to happen. But now I go out and I create an entity, a private entity, and I call it whatever I like. And that entity now gets a contract from, let's say, the state. It can be a front. In other words, you get the contract, but in the end, I'll channel the money from there back to the party. That's the problem. So you can either treat any donation just like a donation, or you can say parties are entitled to have investment arms, and they are entitled to... prosper economically and start a business, etc., and assist their political party which the arm belongs to. But the problem only exists if that entity is doing business with the state, because then it creates all kinds of problems and say, no, 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 the ruling party, whoever that may be, is misusing that situation to channel funds via tenders to the political party. That's where the problem is. So you could regulate the state that you're not entitled to receive donations with or a political party entities should not have any contracts or anything with the state. But that's a very difficult separate discussion, because that is the concern out there that's being used as a front to channel funds, tenders through those arms to political parties.
Correct. That's the essence of the concern, and it's our duty to alleviate those if possible.
Do you want to start, Liz?
I think we should just be wary of over-legislating. Generally, we must not be over-sensitive and over-legislate for one experience or the other. One of the important things in legislation is that you must be, the legislation must be objective. It's like when you say, maybe my wife, I work for government, and then you come and say, my wife cannot get any tender government. See? I think what is in essence and what is important here is the proper declaration must be made. It's a proper declaration. If that investment arm has done this, is going to do this and this, that information must be in the... It must be known to the public what is happening so that it can be scrutinized. But to say that an investment arm can't do anything with the state, then I think we're just over-legislating. It will create problems.
just to make sure that there is no corruption and what we must know that an investment arm of Mazambane has went to ESCOM. This is the process which was followed. Was it fair? Did they bid with other people and so on? If the process was fair, there's nothing wrong with the process. So I think I don't agree with you for the first time, Honorable Mulder, on this one. I think what is important may be a declaration. It must be in the public that this is what has happened, so that we can be able to know what was there corruption and so on. Because I suspect you are running away from corruption. So the processes that are followed are quite strict and fair. If they followed every procedure that they must follow, I don't see anything wrong from where I'm sitting. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's completely correct that there are the concerns about investment arms funding. But I think the concern is more about how those funds were acquired by the investment arm than it is about the investment arm doing business with the government. So if one were to go the route to prohibit any investment arm, so-called investment arm, from doing business with government, I would probably not have any great objection. But what it would do, it would simply mean that the investment arm would be kept at arm's length by a political party, and they'd still do the business with the government, and they'd still channel the money back. So in the end, I don't know that it would actually achieve what we want to achieve. What we want to achieve, in my opinion, is that any business with the government, whoever does business with the government, it is absolutely corruption and fraud free. That's what we want to achieve without doubt. And if banning investment arms from doing business with government can achieve that to some extent, then so be it. But quite honestly, I don't think it would achieve the end we want to achieve.
Can I just put my 2 cents worth and you'll come in? I'm tending to agree with these two gentlemen here, and I'll tell you why. You know, now, after this exercise, if I was a political party, I will distance myself from that investment arm. There's no investment arm that's called ANC investment arm or DA investment arm. Tebe Investments could have been started for that purpose. Today, Tebe Investment does something totally different. So somebody's going to come and argue and say Tebe Investments is not our investment arm, or Chancellor House, or anything else. So this that Bongo was talking about, that doesn't matter who it is. If they're doing business with the state, they must follow PFMA and all. Doesn't matter who they are. For me, our exercise should be monies that come to us must be declared, so that anybody can go and say, you know, yesterday Vincent got money from Matthijs, or party Vincent got money from Matthijs. Let us investigate Matthijs. Where did she get the contract? Is she a whatever? That's for me would be the catch, when the party declares. But to try and block Matthijs there might be, as you're saying, a bit difficult. For me, if whoever it is, I mean, we all know, quite honestly, comrade, honorable members, we all know these people that are doing business with government, because we are part of it. So we'll know that, you know, just yesterday, Hitachi got a big contract, and today Hitachi is donating to the ANC. Is there something funny? Or just yesterday, I think somebody used the car, I think it was Callan or somebody said, the electric car in the UK. So it's not that the electric car must not be developed, but it is me, the political party, did I get money from, in other words, for me to investigate the source of that money. So my take would be, I don't know that there is much we can do with an investment arm in terms of legislation, but we can deal with it in terms of party declaring where it's got its funds from, whether it's investment arm, whether it's the drug dealer, whether it's the local businessman. I think that would be, for me, sufficient to deter these type of things. But Matthijs, and then you, Mulder.
It's going to sound very contradictory, Chair. Must I tell you why? Because we said in one breath that we banned state entities from making donations, right? And then at the same time, a political, and we know, like every political party, if they have an investment arm, we know that. We're saying, okay, but you can still go ahead and go and do business with the state. So we must, there's a level of inconsistency over there. And you can't say that, okay, our primary thing is to avoid corruption, etc., but we are in a heightened level of corruption at the moment, so we must make, when we formulate and stuff, we must, in context of our current conditions, yeah, maybe hopefully in 10 years' time, the levels of corruption and stuff as a result of the decisions and stuff that we are taking today and the act that we are developing or the amendments to the act we are developing today, we'll be able to change that. And then we can go back to amending it. But right now it's not that. So we'd like to live in a world where it's all beautiful and that tenders is the most corrupt form of corruption that is going on in this country now, and we must not run away from that. And I don't think that we are being reactionary or we are being hard on ourselves or we are over-regulating. Tenders is the reason why we are in such a rotten space in this country, that we do not deliver toilets, that we don't do all those things. How much more, when we are so greedy for money, we are not going to corrupt tender processes via our investment arms. When we corrupt them, when we're supposed to deliver toilets, let us be real here. And I think total banning, like no. No business with the state straight up. Go and invest in Standard Bank or whatever and go and make your money that way.
I think we are on the same page, Matthijs. The question that we're asking you is how are you going to confidently say this is the investment arm of the Freedom Front, unless the directors of that company are Mulder and Groenewald. If the directors of this company are Ndlovu, Smith and Geilenes, I'm just using that as an example. Let's assume this company has, we all know that these are friends to Mulder and Groenewald, but the directors of this company or shareholders or whatever you call them are those people. How will we, I'm not disputing you, all I'm saying is when we do it, we must be able to implement it and it must be able to make sense, because I can see an argument coming that says, you know, those people that are controlling this thing are not even members of the Freedom Front. They don't have a membership card. So how do you equate this to the investment arm of the Freedom Front? They might well be, we might all know it, but how do we take them to court or whatever the case might be? And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying yay or nay. All I'm saying is when we, because remember, we're going to take this to the public. And they will come and blast us and say, "Die mense het nie eens gedink nie." I don't want us to be discrediting this process because we didn't think about it. We must be able to defend it, all of us together. So that's the only question that I'm asking. And that's why I'm saying to you, you know, this is, and we can put it down there now, think about it, come back, but certainly before we take it out to the public, we must have clarified it. But it was there. The investment arm story did come up in the public hearings. We must talk to it one way or the other. Honorable Mulder.
Yes, Chairperson. I think Mr. Bongo may have convinced me to a certain extent, in a sense. So, if you talk about not doing any business with the state, it has implications. For example, a private company may have a small contract with the state, 10% of its business, and now it makes a contribution. Are they then prohibited from making any contribution? Of course, they've got this one contract where they supply school books, but that's not their main business. So you get into a very difficult regulating situation in that sense. I understand what our honorable colleague from EFF is basically saying, that the concern is that these things are used purely as a front to channel funds from the state and the whole question of tenders. But if you go back to our mandate, again, in terms of the minutes of the National Assembly, Tuesday, 6th of June, and the motion that gave us our mandate, it says in the last point what we need to do, we establish a committee, et cetera, and then the last point says the need for and possible means of regulating private funding in all its forms, as well as investment entities owned by political parties. That's the mandate, owned by political parties. So if, let's say, for example, you do have an entity and it's owned by the political party and it's known, this is now our investment entity, it's a structure within the party, etc., etc., we will have to regulate about that. And perhaps the only regulation could be that they need to declare. They need to declare where they got the money from, or they're making the donation. They will have to declare, and the party will have to declare that they've received the money from this investment, etc., etc. The problem with regard to corruption and tenders and all those kind of things, maybe outside the ambit in terms of the other legislation that Mr. Lee's referred to. So maybe we are not addressing all the issues with regard to investment arms at the moment, and we should continue thinking about that. But what I've said now seems to be the situation where it's owned, we have to take certain steps, and for the rest, it's a question of transparency and disclosure.
Okay. We'll put it there. I'm saying we'll continue to discuss it tomorrow, even tomorrow evening, on this thing of investment arms. Disclosure, whether the investment or the investment and the party, total ban. I'm looking at you guys on investment, you have to put those two options so that we can think about it, have another bite at it tomorrow after we've discussed it, and another bite on tomorrow evening. Is there anything else on investment after you go that we want to put in? I'm saying just for the first bite, you can always have another one. I really think it was this thing of funding. That was the major concern, that you have an investment arm, it gets preferential treatment, and it brings the money back. Anything else on investment? Honourable Matthijs, do you want to talk to investment arm?
Yeah, just on that front, Chair, it also comes back
with... On the front end, I mean, if political parties are going to go to the extent to do front end, I mean, we also have corrupt politicians and leaders and people in government who do that. So I guess the same criminal acts and whatever that regulate that would regulate any political party who does a fronting business or sets up a arm that's regulated. But as Honourable Mulder pointed out, that the mandate is clear on those known investment arms that they have. But I think we should note it in the Act that we must avoid or discourage and that political parties must declare if they have, and there should be legal repercussions for those who do decide to go the route. Like, we don't have one, but if later on we decide, okay, now we're going to front because we don't want the consequences of not doing tenders, there should be repercussions for that, and we should note it somewhere. Of doing that.
Bongo, I'm looking again at our team. You'll try and capture it one way or the other. We'll look at whatever you guys have captured and reply in the issues about it. Investment answer.
No, but I thought you'll say the team must begin to zero in, because we are agreeing with Mr. Lees and Honorable Mulder joined us. We raised a superior argument to an extent that he finally agreed that we have a point. So I think we must zero in so that we don't... But we'll try to convince also Honourable Matthijs. There's one important thing out of this exercise. If you over-regulate it, political parties will still find a way of getting out. Because they can disestablish all those ones and start new ones and proceed. And you remain with your regulation, which is over-regulated. What do you do? So when you do law, it must be objective, and you must be able to police it. But if you do a law that you can't even police, and when you have done it, it will be like you're multiplying your own efforts by zero. You know, any number multiplied by zero is zero. So we must run away from doing that. What we must do, let's be within the bounds and the limits and do things that we can be able to police and follow in an objective way without over-emphasizing the issue of corruption. We know there is rampant corruption and so on, but let us not over-emphasize corruption to an extent that we can no longer be objective in terms of what we must do as part of our mandate. So I'm trying to bring you closer, Honorable Matthijs, that let us be objective in dealing with this matter so that we can properly legislate. Thank you.
Whilst you're talking to Matthijs and all of us, those guys are trying to capture it. What are you proposing as a opposed to what Honorable says, not even hard and fast, you're just saying you must consider it. What are you proposing, you and Lee? What will you say? So that they can capture it accurately.
I think our main point and focus was that disclosure of what is happening in that space is very important. But we can't say no, no, like we said with the other one. It's not a no, no.
I'm just trying to capture them. Are you saying anything different?
I think that just for clarity, it's that nothing should be said, that there shouldn't be a different sort of treatment for an investment arm from any other company, or it's just, so there's no need to do anything.
That's what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. Yours is saying it's not an issue, although it was raised by the public. We can go back and if the public ever asked us, why haven't you got anything around that? The argument would be if you dealt with like we're dealing with any other job. Mm-hmm. That's what the two of you are saying. Mulder.
Yes, I understand that. May I just ask one thing? In terms of the mandate, we're talking about owned enterprises. Would it be wrong to expect of political parties that they have to declare in terms of regulation if they do own an investment arm? In other words, that's all. Then it's known. We own this and everybody knows that. So when you're going to scrutinize tenders, etc., people will know this belongs to that. That does not prevent you from creating a different thing that you do not own, but it's sympathetic towards your party. And the other point I would like to make, and I agree with Mr. Bonker there, and that goes with regard to regulation in general. Even if you talk about private donations, etc., there's a risk that you can create a tremendous problem for yourself in terms of over-regulation. In other words, you can create wonderful regulations. Human beings are very imaginative. They'll find ways to circumvent that. You can, and we'll get to the details of regulation. We may find at the end that the most effective regulation is to say you have to disclose. And there are some others, perhaps a cap, but that's also, it can create problems, etc. But once we get to regulations in general, we may find that once you fall in the trap of over-regulating the whole thing, you may have all kinds of problems. You're not allowed to do this, not allowed to do that, etc., etc. People will find ways around that. But if you force everyone to disclose, then the electorate should decide in the end, oh, so we take note, the nation came from here, etc., but that's something else.
Okay, so we should be putting somewhere in there, our document, something that says that all political parties must disclose their financial interests or business interests or whatever, and rely on their honesty. And if we ever, as you were saying, catch out tomorrow that in fact they didn't declare, like you deal with us in our declarations, we will deal with them. I think that seems to be the sentiment. And the regulation can either tighten or loosen it, but we want the broad principle. Liz?
Perhaps you've answered my question in the last sentence, because, I mean, what does ownership mean? Is it a 10% share, 50% share, 100% share? It really becomes fraught. And then, Mr. Chairman, the other thing about ownership is there's no legal way of knowing what ownership there is unless there's a declaration. For instance, companies listed on the stock exchange, the shares transact on a daily basis. It's impossible to know at any point unless someone says so, or there's a major shareholder who goes to the AGM and so on, for the public to know. In other words, the CIPC has no register of shareholding. It has a register of directors, but no register of shareholding. And so there's no central repository that you can go and say, yeah, but look, the DA holds shares in this company, and this is how much they hold. It's a fraught subject.
Let's leave it like that. You guys will do your best shots around investment ring, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what heading you put, but it's talking to the investment vehicles. Disclosure, parties to be honest, rely on their honesty and deal with them if you catch them out. Right? Source of funding. I don't know, Mr. Mulder, you gave us quite a few topics, so I'm just going to any one of them.
The one issue was the source of donations. let me just repeat what was again said in there, but guys, you can't do anything about membership. ANC gives 100 rand membership a year. Just don't even touch us on that one. Then there was the issue of course, the private, whoever the private is, what do we do with them? Then there was the issue about foreign, talking about source, and then, so it will be foreign, it will be membership, and then it will be just Joe Soap in the street that donates and says, I'm giving to party X openly. So are there any issues that we want to raise around the source of funding? Let's take Bongo, Liz, Mulder, source of funding to political parties. This is direct funding.
Yeah, thanks. I think, one, the source must not be arising from, demand must not be arising from a criminal act. I think that we must be clear there, that must not be as a result of fraud or drugs whatsoever the legal people want to put in. But in terms of foreign, it can be foreign, but I think on foreign we'll mainly deal with when you come to capping, not unless we're discussing that how do we cap the foreign, but it should not be in this instance. So remember the previous time we said foreign government can give to the general, to the main one, but foreign government can't give to a political party. Foreign government can't give to the private political party because that will cause serious problems. So these are two things. I think we need to clearly separate them. Foreign government can give to the general central fund, but foreign government can't give to a party. But foreign individuals may give, but what we must deal with is the capping. To what extent, how much, I think that's what we must be able to regulate. But any other person, again, any other source must, individuals, they must be disclosed to an extent that they are comfortable to be disclosed. But when we visit you, we want to know who funded this. You must be able to tell us, Stenazian is the one who funded me. That record must be kept. White Monopoly. What do you want me to say now? If it's white monopoly capital,
no.
I mean, I'm making an example. If it's white monopoly capital, the person who received that money from white monopoly capital must have the records. This money is from the white monopoly capital. In the event we will want to know you receive money from that particular source. Yeah, thank you.
I think it was Gleason and Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I think the objective is to state which sources of funds we don't want to take rather than to try and identify the ones that are acceptable. So I think that proceeds of crime are clearly unacceptable. But I think they're also probably dealt with in other legislation. But just to make that clear, we could include that as a category. And then I think that whilst we agreed that for the central fund, the foreign governments could make donations, there should, in our opinion, be a complete prohibition of foreign governments donating to any political party or to any independent candidate, but perhaps that's beyond our mandate in terms of the independent candidate. Then in terms of state-owned enterprises, I would say that there should be a complete prohibition there as well.
State-owned enterprises.
And government departments. Same as the other one, yeah.
I'm saying it for the benefit of those state-owned and government enterprises.
And then, Mr. Chairman...
I mean, government departments.
And then, Mr. Chairman, I think that now it becomes a question of trying to look at the disclosure. So I'm not sure whether you want to discuss disclosure.
Yes, we can discuss it because they're
interlinked. Okay, so in terms of disclosure, there has to be a balance between the right to privacy and the what we're trying to achieve in terms of transparency. And so there has been suggestions made that there's also the practicality of it, of where does the obligation to disclosure start and finish. And so I think that there should be no requirement for my membership fee of 10 rand to be disclosed. But if I chose to give another 100 rand at the top of my 10 rand, that really would be not a disclosable donation. So when does it become a disclosable donation? And I think that is something we need to think about very carefully, and then to balance the constitutional right to privacy, which is embedded in our constitution. And so if we are going to agree to some form of disclosure at all, then it must be a limited disclosure, both in terms of the amounts involved, and those would have to be revised from time to time, but also in terms of who to. And so the example of the parliamentary disclosure of members' interests is probably not a bad one to look at, where there is a confidentiality and it's accessible to people, to persons, not individuals, but to positions or people in certain positions, with good cause given. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it at that for now.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I've identified six sources of funding. The one, and we've mentioned most of them. The first one is membership fees of political parties. My view is that should not be regulated. That's to the parties, and it should not be declared. The second is what is called mandate holder contributions. In other words, most parties have an expectation that their representatives should contribute a certain percentage of their salary to the party. And my view is that also does not need to be declared. That's something that the party internally sorts out, that we should discuss that.
That's levied.
The party says, I expect my members to contribute 5% of their salary per month to the party. My view is that it need not be declared, but if we should perhaps discuss that. That's mandate holder contribution.
No, let's discuss it as we go along, because before here we're going to ask that. Sure. I agree personally with Mulder that it's an internal party event that should not be declared. Does anybody disclose? We're talking about disclosure now, source and disclosure. Does anybody have a different view on levies, party levies, and membership? Those we're happy with.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Then the next one is... basically what we receive in terms of constituency allowances and party support, administrative support, etc., but that's from a different source now. It's public funds. But my view again there is that in terms of what we are busy with, that need not to be declared because it's being audited and declared in the other forms
right.
by the legislature.
So that is, for their sake, political party funding. Because there's IE and accounting or whatever. So that one doesn't have to be declared.
The fourth source of income would be then private donations, individual and companies, and that need to be regulated and declared, as we've said in the past. Then the fifth source of income would be state contributions. That's the current IEC fund, and it's currently also being audited and declared. Basically, it's in the public knowledge what happens to that. And the last one in terms of source of income would then be the investment arms, but we've already dealt with that one. Basically, those would be that I know of six forms of sources for income. Then, with regard to the no-nos, We've said now proceeds of crime. We've said state-owned enterprises and government departments. What about the lottery? In other words, my view would be it should not be allowed to make a contribution to the funds. I don't know what the Act on the National Lottery says. I think those funds are meant for other things in terms of social upliftment, et cetera, et cetera. But the question would be, do you need to specifically say that the lottery is not allowed to make contributions or just to the party? To the party or even to the multi-party fund? Because the lottery deals with private funds that people put into that. But I'm not sure what the Act says. I think there are different expectations of what lottery should do with their funds.
Okay, but we just ignore it. We can make a proposal. Yeah. Nobody's opposed to that, is it?
No. Money to
no, they give money to everyone, not political parties, but they
I know that
money.
They had a social lottery fund, but I didn't know about.
All right. National lottery is also a no-go.
I agree.
All right. Agreed, eh?
Agreed.
Okay. All right. Private funding? Disclosure. I think we are saying you can't limit people. You can't. As long as it's not for these no-nos, anybody can donate to a political party of his choice. We agreed on that. Disclosure is the issue, and cap is the issue. Now, when we say anybody, I'm assuming that we've been talking about South Africans in the diaspora.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're saying anybody should be able to give. The question is disclosure from a transparency point of view, and cap if necessary, bearing in mind the privacy that is being discussed there, and there's the other side of it on the other. And of course, there's a top capping and there's a bottom capping. I mean, if somebody donates 12 rand, should be disclosed. So there's a bottom capping. Up to how high, doesn't matter who, we don't even worry about it. From there onwards, you start declaring. And then the top capping, can Vincent donate 50 billion or 100? So it's those two capping and the disclosure, I think, is what we are on to now. Honorable Lisa was leaving it halfway, saying there must be that. Let me give you my one first, and we can. I mean, this is my one. You know, personally.
First of all, I agree that below a certain amount, we don't even have to disclose. I haven't agreed on. I mean, I haven't thought about the amount. 5,000, 10,000, it doesn't matter. So that's what I'm happy with. In terms of disclosure, let's assume that we said the limit is 10,000, whatever the limit might be. My view is that beyond 10,000 rand, if that is our lower limit, my view is that everything must be disclosed. If I give to a political party beyond the 10,000 threshold, then I must be duty-bound as a political party receiving the money to say I've received this money from Joseph. Because the argument that I'm putting forward, one, is that Joseph, whether he's an individual or a party, if he funds sufficiently, he who pays the piper calls the tune. So it's no longer the membership of the EFF that voted the EFF on the basis of a manifesto, but it's Vincent that went to the EFF and said, besides your manifesto, if you want money from me, move in that direction. So it's really about policy influence. And I think the point also made by the... No, we've dealt with sovereignty because we've said that's out of the question in terms of things. Yeah, but for me, it's about, honestly, colleagues, if I'm donating to a political party, it means my heart is there and I shouldn't be embarrassed to do it. Number two, if I'm donating there for ulterior motives, if it's not declared, you'll never know that party X has now gone in this direction and why it's gone in that direction, because there's no free lunch for me. So, for me, those are the more compelling reasons. And also, I hear Honorable Lee talking about the constitutional requirement of privacy. I think we need to balance that constitutional requirement or provision of privacy versus the constitutional requirement of openness and all those type of things, and the real threat that Honorable Matthijs keeps on talking about of rampant corruption and so on. Yes, there might be that thing, but which is the better of the two evils is the question that we must ask. And I'm saying if we are serious about corruption, we are serious about privacy theft, for want of a better word, because I've got money, I think that we should declare. And if I've got nothing to hide as Vincent, why should I be nervous of saying I'm paying to Mulder? Because it's my choice. It doesn't mean if I pay to Mulder, I can't pay to Bongo. I can say I'm paying to Mulder and I'm paying to Bongo, but for me, beyond the limit, whatever that limit is that we agree upon, there should be total disclosure. That's my input, Honorable Member.
And Mulder and then Lise.
Chairperson, yes, I understand what you're saying. At the moment, I don't have an upper limit in terms of contributions. The only reason why you would set an upper limit, you're not allowed to contribute more than that, is you go way beyond this and start to regulate and say you're not allowed to spend more than X amount in an election, and you want to prevent and decrease the amounts being spent by parties, then you will have to say upper limits, etc., etc. You remember one of the presentations we had also said if you start with upper limits and things, then the person must then declare the different, the sum total of the donations made through the year, because you then start to have, you're not allowed to donate more than $1 million. When? Per year? Per donation? You get into all those kind of things. So obviously, from my view, I would say you need a bottom limit below which you don't have to declare anything. I don't think at the moment in terms of an upper limit. And then there's the discussion about privacy and the two, and one can argue both. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would agree with the Honourable Mulder that the upper limit is really not an issue until there's some kind of limit put onto the actual spending for elections, and also the complications of trying to police it. But Mr. Chairman, there is no one who has yet been able to give us any empirical evidence that links corruption to donations to political parties. It doesn't exist. It exists as my perception as an individual and someone else's perception. And so, I give you the example of Mexico and the United States of America, which are touted as the best regulated. But there's corruption that's rampant in both those countries. And so there's no causal link that we can latch onto between those two. So I think that one must look at the right to privacy very carefully when one's looking at this, and not simply put it aside on the basis of achieving an end which indeed we probably will not achieve. And so I think that we need to set if we're going to set at all, and we don't view the need to set any limits on disclosure, that disclosure should not be an issue, because we don't see the link to this corruption. But if there is going to be that limit must, that cap, call it what you want, must be set at a level that is practical and gives some freedom of people to donate without impinging on their privacy. And Mr. Chairman, we talk about the link between corruption and donation. I gave you one small example last week of a link between simply a friendship with me as a DA MP and the financial consequences that a person suffered. There are potential consequences for donors if their donations become known, particularly to people in government to do business, and it might not be the ANC government, it might be any government. There is a definite link there. And so to suggest that there is no reason for people to not want their donations to be known, I put it to you, is not accurate. That there is a very good reason why donors are very careful about their donations being made public, because of the possible consequences both in business and in society and in their communities.
Other views? Now, before you, Mr. Miller, let's take the same thing come back on this matter of disclosure. I think we've agreed there's a bottom limit. We just have to agree on the rest of the bottom limit. It either should have been upper limit and the extent of disclosure.
Okay, so I won't reinvent the wheel on why we need 100% disclosure. If you want to donate to any political party, it must be noticed, so we need to work on what the amount should be. I think we should, though, point out, so we're talking about the cap now. So we're agreeing that underneath we've agreed that membership, wada-wada, doesn't attract disclosure. So now we're saying we want to have some sort of cap, or up to how much, and if you exceed this amount of money, you must disclose. I would like us to have a discussion, and we must individual donations, a cap for individual donations, and for company donations, right? Or that whatever you want to call it, because it's two different things. But I do think that any company that donates should not receive the same benefit as a private individual who donates less than a certain amount of money. Companies must declare regardless of how much they are donating. And the fact that a company, this thing of economic sabotage, and how does the company come to that decision, number one, to even make a donation to one political party is an issue, because they generate their income from operating in a country, right? So there's no one, you can't tell me that the whole system, and I raise this obviously in all my meetings, who buys their services or who buys their products are not necessarily aligned to that political party who they might be making a decision to give money to. So I'm saying that when it comes to company giving donations directly to a political party, it must be disclosed both by the party, both by the political party. On private donations, on individuals, there should be a cap. We'll talk about the cap, and I'm saying 100%. We're saying 100% year beyond the cap. So.
Manuela, you were next on the road.
Yes, Chairperson. We need to talk about the balance between the right to privacy, as in the Bill of Rights, and on the other hand, those principles that you mentioned on the founding provisions, Section 1 of the Constitution. They are differently entrenched. Some 75% and the Bill of Rights 66%, but be that as it may. What I'm saying is it lies at the essence of regulating the question of privacy or not privacy. And maybe we should flag it for the moment and let's think about it and let's engage further on this before we take any concrete decisions.
All right, I have no problem. This is one thing that I wanted to raise that I don't know, Honorable Lees, if you don't raise it because you don't think about it in the way I think about it or whatever. I've never argued personally, because we're openly, I've never argued about the anti-corruption part of it. My emphasis is on the accountability part of it. You can't say that you're for accountability and at the same time say don't disclose. So the corruption I can agree with on what Honorable Lees is saying. But when, honourable members, when we come to accountability, if this parliament is about accountability to whoever, we should be accountable for ourselves. So that's the point that I wanted to put on the table. Corruption, I agree. And corruption, we've said, there's the PFMA, there's the supply chain management, and all those type of things. We must discuss the economic bullying that I think Honourable Self raised. And to what extent is that real, the economic bullying, I agree. But you can't get away from, you cannot say I can account and not disclose. That's my argument, that if you are serious about accountability, you must disclose. So if you guys can package those,
Maybe tomorrow afternoon, or tomorrow we'll come back to this one, about the disclosure. First of all, to what extent do we put it in the law, and to what extent do we accommodate it in the regulation? Is it, we've got 15 minutes. Okay, so around source and disclosure, we more or less arrived. There was the cap and the purposes. I don't know if there's any more, Honorable Mulder, but when you were talking investment arms, we've dealt with disclosure, source, there's the caps and the purpose. What do political parties, should there be a law that says you can't do X, Y, and Z, and the caps? I don't know if there's anything else in those lists that you've raised with me. Let's talk about the purpose. Once a political party has got 100 rand in his pocket, from whoever, legitimately, should we be saying to that political party what they can and can't do with it? I think that's the whole thing about purpose. Because the argument, again, I will always go to what we've got in the submission so that we are never ever challenged. The argument has always been, you guys use all your money just for elections. You never use your money for capacity building. You never use your money in between elections. You never use your money for anything else. That was the public submissions. And that is where the purpose came in. Many political parties said, don't babysit us. But it was there. So I'm just asking the question, should we be specific about purpose, or should we be saying, as long as you account, it's your problem. Honorable Steenhuisen, only on the purpose of legitimate funding for whatever source.
I think that once the funding has passed the hurdles that we've set for it to here, it's up to the political party then to decide. I think it would be completely nanny state for us to interfere or dictate to the party. And obviously you can't use it for criminal proceeds. But again, there's already existing legislation that exists for, you know, what is lawful and what's unlawful. But I think to now start dictating to a party that you must spend 10% on this and 20% on that is getting into a realm where we're over-regulating, over-egging the situation. I think we should leave it up to political parties themselves to decide how best to spend the funding that they've got. And they've got to live and fall by those decisions. If there are long-term ramifications, they're not doing capacity building, and ending up with public reps who can't do their job, well, they're going to suffer because the voters will see that they're not performing and vote them out. There'll be electoral consequences. But I just really think that we're getting into the realm of over-regulating. We start saying that, well, now you've passed all the hurdles, and now when you get the money, this is what you must do with it. So I think it's far too prescriptive.
Any other, or is there any contrary view in terms of that should not even apply? Anybody feel that there should be specific purposes? No. All right. As long as, of course, we don't have to put it in there, but people will know you can't bring illegal stuff. But so there will be no reference to. You can. There will be a long-term political ramification. All right. So around, I mean, this is as I picked it up. If there's any more questions, so purpose, we think.
But it should go to the extent of saying party-related activity.
Or democracy-related activity. No,
political party-related activities, no.
Whatever the party decides.
Yes, like, but must be party-related, like building the political party, whether you want to... But if I start as the TG of EFF Society, because I'm there, start using that money to... Yeah, it can be a flip to flow.
Okay.
I disagree, because I think that, you know, if Mr. Bongo feels particularly strongly about rhino conservation and he encourages his political party to buy tickets at a table for rhino conservation, you know, why would you outlaw that? It's not party political related, it's not democracy related, it's not state funds. If Mr. Bongo is able to convince his party that this is a good cause, there's no reason why it should be an impediment for him doing so. I just think, again, we must stray from the realm of over-regulating, because then enforcement and compliance becomes very difficult, and you don't then have a culture of compliance. We need to make it as easy as possible for parties to to comply to the ultimate letter of the legislation. When you start, you know, doing this, that's when the grey areas start being created.
But, all right, because it was introduced and we said there's no holy cows, you'll put both option one and two, you'll go and think about it, we'll think about it, everybody will think about it. And we will, we're not going to exhaust everything today, but at least we'll be coming closer. Can we move over from purpose? We'll revisit it again tomorrow.
Okay, but we're not too far from each other, so we don't have to
come back to it. When we say party, politically party-related work, but I'm not necessarily talking about elections. So that example that you want to buy tickets for our rhino poaching thing, it is, it's related to your political party in some way. So we're not far from each other. What I'm saying is that there is a risk for leaders in political parties to start using money that comes into the coffers to be able to do their own thing, and it's not related to work of a political party, whatever you choose to do as a political party.
As a way forward, can I suggest that we don't talk about purpose, but because we've got 2 days today and another bite, if there becomes a need for us to put a purpose, even if it's a one line or whatever, we can put it in. But I'm saying for the sake of us going on tomorrow, we won't talk to purpose. Caps, bottom caps, top caps and bottom caps. There was a suggestion that there shouldn't be top caps. And remember, bottom caps, when you say cap, we're talking about a cap under which you don't have to declare. And besides what Honorable Matthijs brought another one in, if the cap is 10,000 Rand, we're talking about disclosure for individuals. Her argument is that for corporates, there must be disclosure even if it's 1 Rand. I think that's what I understood her to be saying. Total disclosure for corporates through companies. So you must talk to that. Or do we just say if the limit is 10 Rand, it's 10 Rand across the board? And we've got 5 minutes. Maybe we should just talk to this one and then we can do the others tomorrow, just on this one. Is there any question on lower cap, upper cap, who do we cap? Maseko and then Liz, and then Matthijs.
Chairperson, I think for the lower cap, it shouldn't be limited to whether it's individuals or business or so. I don't think if we say everybody must declare anything less than 10 rand, if you say 10 rand. Over and above that, it must be declared. So,
everybody's free.
Free.
The limit is 10 rand. 10
rand,
yes. All
right.
Honorable Lees and then Honorable Matthijs.
Mr. Chairman, I can't remember who made the point, but I do think it was a valid point last week that the right to privacy, none of our rights are absolute, but that the test for individuals would be lower than the test for corporations. So what I'm saying to you is that individuals should be protected more so than corporations. And so I would suggest, with due respect, that there should be different caps for individuals and corporations, and that there may be good argument to support Honorable Matthijs that corporations should be 100% declared. There shouldn't be a lower cap, except I suppose there are practicalities when it comes to 10 Rand, 50 Rand, but I can't imagine a corporation giving a donation as small as that. But it would be a practical cap for them as opposed to a right to privacy cap. However, with individuals, the right to privacy cap, I would like to reserve our position as to where that cap should be put. I think that we can draft the document for this afternoon without actually putting an amount into it. I think we need to consider that carefully.
All right. So regulations will come at all those things. There must be a cap below which you don't have to declare. We're all agreeing, besides all those other things of membership and whatever. Here we're talking about individuals and corporates. Where we seem to be needing more discussion is whether below that cap applies to everybody or whether below that cap applies to individuals and not and corporates must be 100%. So those are the two issues that we should raise around those issues. Just for our own preparations, and I say our own preparations, both individually and collectively, can we just quickly, I know time is up, just quickly try and recap the kind of areas that we think are clearing. Of course, the 90-10 we know. Of course, equitable and whatever we know. Besides these two things that we're going to touch now. And then there's the whole, what is the bottom limit? Okay, the bottom limit. What just so that we, for instance, let me be upfront, we're going to have a study group. We want to be able to go to the study group and say, how do we meet each other when we get to those points? So you can influence me, yeah. So it's the 90-10, that's the one. The two is the lower cap, isn't it? And this is for all of us that we need to come back to. The lower cap, what's the third one? The equitable, yes.
The equitable part is a different issue. How you calculate the equitable? It's not a simplistic equitable, it's a weighted equitable, but there's arguments in that sense as well. May I add another one to
this? Yes,
it's the whole management and control of the private fund, the multi-party democracy fund. We should take responsibility for that.
It's really the argument of, is the ISD or an independent member?
Correct.
Okay, so it's ISD or other. For the central fund.
Yeah. Is our concern about policemen versus and how
will it come into that one?
Yeah.
If you say the ISD, then you must deal with that matter. If you say somebody else, you must deal with something else. If you say the ISD and you deal with that front, do they have the capacity? The whole issue is the ISD. Is there any
addition? The balance between the right to privacy and the right to disclose. That's our discussion.
Can you guys quickly go to the areas here that we said is option one and option two? So it's the whole issue about disclosure that we discussed now. What else we discussed? It was
the
investment arms you were having.
No.
Yeah.
Only
they happy.
So yeah, they happy. You be not
what
happy.
What is your argument with investment arms? Oh, you're saying they mustn't do business with.
Yeah.
Them.
Absolutely, yeah. And also the party funding that the provinces are dishing out, I guess they will apply, the proportion will apply, or the equitable will apply there, but whether that goes also into the IEC and it's done centrally, or whether we allow the province. Not the constituency funding. I'm talking about those other, the
animal number three.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Honourable members, up list of seven. It's the 90-10. It's the lower cap. It's equitable. It's IEC or other. It's disclosure. Privacy versus whatever. It's investment arm. And then it's and number three. So there are seven areas that if we were able to go through them, we'd be able to give you myself something to work on. Because on all the rest, we're more or less together. All right. So I just for tomorrow, do we want these young men to give us an updated document of what we've done today? And then you can list these things that we have here. In fact, where there's supposed to be discussion, we'll already have it. This is like option one and option two. And then towards the end, you can say still to discuss 90-10, blah, 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 blah. So if we could have that document sometime this afternoon. They should be ready. Are we ready to give us a document, the update of today? This document. I'm looking at it. Will be able to give us that?
Yeah.
All right. We will get then, it's no more going to be called preamble. You can call it preamble one, for want of a better word. So that we know that we're working on whatever document is, because we've just got so many documents that we're working on.
We'll give it another name, Chair, but not preamble.
Yeah,
preamble is in the act.
Preamble confuses me. Every time you say preamble, I look at
preamble
is the act.
All I'm saying
is draft two.
Draft two. Give us eight documents.
Chair, can we just call it draft outline of bill? So it's the draft outline, because that's what it really is. It's an outline of the points, some of which are agreed, some of which still require further discussion.
All I'm saying is that at the end of the week, if I have three documents that say draft outline, I must know that this one is more current than that one. That's why I like draft outline one and draft outline two. Because there will always be updates. All right. Matej, do you want to say something before we close?
No, I'm good. Thank you, Chair.
Good. Inform members of possibility. Oh, okay. Honourable members, we have applied for tomorrow evening. Not tonight. Tomorrow evening. So we will work tomorrow, and hopefully we can do as much good work as we're doing now. If not, we'll work in the evening, because we have got a deadline to give to them if we want to meet or whatever. So I think the House rises at 5 o'clock tomorrow, 4 past 6 tomorrow. So can we say that tomorrow we'll meet at 7? We'll take a decision obviously in the morning, but please block out from 7 o'clock to about 9 o'clock tomorrow evening, all right? And we will make... Because we are going to do that, we will organize dinner for you for tomorrow. Yeah. Me and So, honourable members, we will meet tomorrow morning for the assembly at night. For the assembly, 9 o'clock. We will continue where we left off. 9 tomorrow for the assembly. And then, if possible, we'll meet at 7 o'clock in the evening. I'm looking at Cindy and the team. Can we get draft, whatever you call it, can we get that thing by 7 o'clock tonight? Thank you very much.
So will it be me and you at 7 tomorrow evening?